I don't know how it works for you, but for many families, money's an issue. They have a weekly budget, so they've got kind of money, and it's spent in various ways. And whether they do this on the table like I'm about to now, or whether they do it in other ways, they sort it out. There's money that has to be spent on the essentials, the mortgage, the electricity and gas and all that stuff. Do they spend money on Foxtel so that they will stay in and not spend extra money going out? Or do they save money by not buying Foxtel and then go out and spend it on other things? We'll come back to that in a minute. So there's essentials, of which Foxtel is not one. And when they've met those, they might go into those other things, those things that we might consider more of luxuries, whether that's icy poles or lollies or whether it's trips to the cinema or whatever it might be. And then there's stuff that they just kind of lose. It kind of goes down the back of the sofa, or it's in pockets which you've hung back up in the wardrobe. And then there's stuff that people kind of waste. They spend it on bad things. Is that 100? It's not real money. They spend it on stuff that doesn't work out for them, or, do you know? And what we have to do is we have to budget and make choices about how much money we spend and where we spend it and what we consider to be essential. And if there's more going out than coming in, we're in trouble. Now, we tend to do the same with our lives and our time, our spiritual, our emotional, our physical resources. And whether it's on a weekly or a daily or whatever basis, we keep some back because we need me time, up time, protect our time, spend our there. We invest some in our priorities, the essentials, faith, family, significant others, friends, whatever. We spend some time in that kind of leaving it lying about, you know. Where did that time go today? It's like you've lost it down the back of the sofa. You knew there was 2 hours and now they've gone and you've no idea what you did with it. Some on luxuries, recreation, leisure, sport. Some that we might call wasteful, that kind of vegging, couch potato sort of time. Others, perhaps, like with our money, we see a need and we respond to it. Now, we budget. We budget ourselves, whether consciously or unconsciously. We make choices about how much, where, and what we consider essential. What goes on what pile? The essential, the important, the luxury. Now, the things that our parents might have thought of as luxuries, or even waste, we might consider to be essentials. The stresses of contemporary living might make us more self-protective. The selfishness in our culture may incline us more to individualistic choices. So we decide what's appropriate to give of ourselves, trying to spend first on the essentials, our priorities, trying to have some left over to bring rest and restoration, and giving out of what's left to those requests and demands, being careful not to go into what we see as debt. More going out than there is coming in. And as Christians in Oz, here's a story that I've heard many, many times. I've heard it even more times in England because I had more years in ministry there yet. But you'll catch up. And it goes like this. It's the story of tired and stressed people who are looking to be fulfilled and blessed and whole, and wondering why they feel God doesn't show up. It's the stories of people who feel that they've been burnt by their experience of church, and they don't want to overcommit or even commit at all. But at the same time, they long to belong. It's the story of people who long to see the power of God released in their lives, but at the same time, don't want to take risks because there's fear. It's a story of people who are wanting to store up enough blessings in their spiritual bank account so they've got enough in there so that they'll have enough to spend on others. And they want to see it in there before they'll spend in case they run out. We believe as a leadership that one of the key Bible passages that God's challenged Berwick Vineyard Church with is that passage from Isaiah 58, which we've read several times, that if you do this, then I will do this passage. It's a passage about Israel setting aside days to fast, wearing sackcloth and ashes, who are perplexed because God doesn't seem to respond and meet their needs. And God challenges them through the prophet. He says that though they seem to want to come near God, it's a fasting that's based on ritual and not changed hearts. So even though they go through the ritual of fasting, they still fight and quarrel. They still don't follow God's commands. They don't care for the poor and needy. They don't stand up for the oppressed. They don't even care for their own families properly. And that is what God is looking for, and that is what God will bless. And as and when they respond, then his blessing, then his power, then his resources will be poured out. It's one of those if and then situations. Do you want this? Then do this. And towards the end of the passage are some verses I want to read which stood out as what God wanted to say to us this morning specifically. He made that very clear, and I'll explain a bit of that later. As well as this word being a word to his people set in time at a particular point, it's something that gives us challenges to respond to and amazing promises to look forward to. And here it is, Isaiah 58, verse 10. Isaiah 58, and verse 10. If you want to turn to it, double check. I'm not conning you. That would be great. And here it is. And if you spend yourselves on behalf of the hungry and satisfy the needs of the oppressed, then your light will rise in the darkness and your night will become like the noonday. The Lord will guide you always. He will satisfy your needs in a sun-scorched land and will strengthen your frame. You'll be like a well-watered garden, like a spring whose waters never fail. Your people will rebuild the ancient ruins and will raise up the age-old foundations. You'll be called repairer of broken walls, restorer of streets with dwellings. Spend yourselves. You're thinking, oh no, another guilt trip. You know where it's going, don't you? Spend yourselves. You know where it's going. And you feel pressured enough already. There's nothing in that extra bit of your account. Not even a 10. Now, if you think that, you misunderstand me, but more importantly, you misunderstand God. As well as wanting us to be agents of his kingdom, he wants to bring so much more blessing into our lives. And he knows that our faithfulness in these areas will release the blessing. Spend yourselves. I've looked at pretty much every translation I can find of this verse, and it's got some amazing nuances of meaning. Expend yourselves. One translation says, extend your souls. Another, pour yourself out. So you get that picture of cost, engagement, connection, compassion, and the need to budget our lives with God's priorities in mind. Whatever's in the bank of our lives, whatever is in our weekly budget, mine is slightly less because I've just ripped up 100. Whatever is in our weekly budget, God wants his people to give a significant portion to the hungry and the oppressed. Whether that's physically or spiritually or emotionally, hungry or struggling. And God promises that he will pour out riches as we do it. But we can't prove it without doing it. And if we don't do it, we won't prove it, and it won't happen. So, we're going to look at what kingdom is about in this area, and four important areas. The first is living kingdom principles. Living kingdom principles. When I were a lad, something happened in England which was an incredible innovation, and it was the Come Together musicals. Any of you heard of them? If you're ancient, you might have done. Jimmy and Carol White. And whenever you heard the noise, da-da-dum-dum, you go, come together in Jesus' name. And it was fantastic. But I'm so old, I can remember it. I can remember it because an American choir came to our church, and they were pouring over the pulpit. They were all over there. They were down the aisles singing. And they were singing straight at us. And the particular girl who was singing at me was wearing braces, and I'd never seen braces before. I was only 11. And as you know, English people tend to be gappy-toothed because we don't do braces very often. And so here she is, kind of singing a heart out, and I'm going, what are those? I was scared. But anyway, out of that musical came a song, Freely, Freely, You Have Received, Freely, Freely, Give, which we always used to sing during the giving of the offering. Freely you've received, freely give. But do you know where that comes from? Do you know where freely you've received, freely give comes from? Well, I'll tell you. It's Matthew 10, verse 7. As you go, preach this message. The kingdom of heaven is near. Heal the sick, raise the dead, cleanse those who have leprosy, drive out demons. Freely you've received, freely give. It's not about dosh at all. It's not about dollars. It might include dollars. But God's going, through Jesus, you've received the kingdom. You've been saved. You've experienced miraculous power, healing, deliverance, signs and wonders. Now go do it. Give it away. Share it. Take it to others. Freely you've received, freely give. Now what exactly will that look like for you today? I don't know. I'm not you. God will lead you in the specifics if you listen. But I can tell you that Jesus has given us an instruction to share the kingdom of heaven, to give away what we've been given. And it's going to involve telling people about it one way or another. It's going to involve praying for people one way or another. It's going to involve pressing in and pressing on with the miraculous one way or another. To live a kingdom principle involves action, decisions, and choices. We can't just think it and believe it. We have to do it. Kingdom principles will always lead us to kingdom tasks if we follow through faithfully. What tasks? I don't know. I'm not you. I don't know exactly. I know it is an exciting adventure for us to go on with God, and it begins with us saying, what do you want me to do, Lord? With the presumption that when he tells you, you'll do it. Not us saying, tell me what you want me to do, and I'll decide whether I'm going to say yes. But saying, whatever it is, yes, Lord, now what is it? There's a rather important difference between those two things, isn't there? For us to live kingdom principles, we have to fulfill kingdom tasks. And a key part of that is giving away. Sharing what we've received. It's about also claiming kingdom promises. You've got your headings. They're very good, aren't they? They seem to fit with each other. Maybe you'll remember them. Living kingdom principles, claiming kingdom promises. Jesus said, give and it will be given to you. A good measure, pressed down, shaken together and running over, will be poured out into your lap. For with the measure you use, it will be measured to you. Now, the context for that is basically Jesus was saying anybody can be nice to people who are nice to them. That's what he was saying. Anybody can be nice to people who are nice to them. I want you to love and give to and forgive and be merciful to and bless your enemies. Those outside your circle. Now, that may start with a family. It may start with a family. That if you want to be blessed, you need to love and be merciful to your husband, to your wife, to your kids, to your mom and dad. That's where it starts. I can see people smiling and talking. They know. And it reaches out beyond. Spend yourself beyond those comfortable, easy, rewarding places to those who maybe you feel don't deserve it or don't appreciate it. And then the picture he gives is of you going to a shop and asking for a kilogram of something. And rather than having a stingy shopkeeper who pours it so it looks full, but if you shake it down, a bit like your packet of cornflakes or whatever, you know, you get it and it's already three quarters of the way down when you open it. It's the shopkeeper who puts it in and then presses it down and puts some more in and then shakes it until it goes flat and then pours some more out until it's going all the way over and that's yours. That's the picture Jesus is given. And he's saying, that's what I'll do with you. That's the promise. Spend yourself, maybe spend even what you feel you don't have, and Jesus will promise you more than enough. But if the measure we use is miserly or mean or selfish in terms of what we hand out to others, I have this, you can have that, then we shouldn't be expecting generous measures ourselves. Then when we go to God, he goes, well, this is the measure you use, so there you go. Misers can be rich. Misers can be poor. We can hoard to have enough. We can hoard to have more. We can fear losing what we have. For that, philanthropists, those who want to give away generously, can be rich or poor. Being generous in their much, being generous despite their little. And the same is true for us as we spend our lives. We can choose to give of ourselves out of our much or our little. We can choose to hold on to what we have, whether much or little. But if we live as spiritual misers, we'll end up in spiritual poverty. That's the kingdom principle. And the promise is that if we live generously, if we spend out of our little or our much to bless, we end up with spiritual riches. But we have to believe the promise to claim it. Otherwise, we'll fear the cost. And we have to live the promise to claim it because we can't prove it without doing it. Claiming kingdom promises. Unlocking kingdom power. This is so good, you should all be taking notes. And if you're not, I'm presuming you're going to get it afterwards. Because this is God stuff, not me. Unlocking kingdom power. John 6, verse 9. This account is given several times in the Bible, or accounts like it. But if I say to you the verse, here is a boy with five small barley loaves and two small fish, how far will they go among so many? What am I talking about? The feeding of the 5,000. Now, if you look at the other accounts and this account and you put them together, it is clear that what happened was that after Jesus had issued that challenge, the disciples went walking among the 5,000 people to see what was there in terms of packed lunch. They were looking around to see if they could find some food resources. So they were looking to see what was available in the packed lunch department. Now I want to say this. I have no proof of this conclusive, but I do know people and I do know human nature. And I want to say to you, as they walked among the 5,000 people, I bet there was more than one boy with a packed lunch. Wasn't there? 5,000 people out with nothing to eat? I think not. If that little boy had got a packed lunch, there were others. So can you imagine the disciples walking among the 5,000? What's going on? Some of them are hiding it. Some of them have eaten it quickly. Others have moved to the back of the crowd so that they can eat at their leisure when this is all over. It's bound to be right, isn't it? I found this quite interesting and amusing. And you can see it. The disciples are walking through. They stuff another piece of bread in their mouth and they go, what's the point of me giving this to 5,000 people? We'll all get a crumb and not only will I be hungry, but they'll be hungry as well. You can't argue with the logic unless Jesus is involved. But one boy handed his lunch over or got caught. We're not entirely sure whether he just got it out early. You know, it was 11 o'clock and he was a bit... Oof. He risked being hungry with nothing to show for it, and he was part of an amazing miracle because Jesus was involved. And his handing over what he had to Jesus unlocked kingdom power. He ate his full, so did everyone else, and there was plenty left over. And that is kingdom logic. We unlock kingdom power when we hand stuff over, when we give it away, because we trust that when Jesus is involved, he'll more than make up our lack, and that out of that he'll bring blessing to us and others. In Matthew 25, in the parable of the talents, where the master entrusts his property, the faithful servants put what they've been given to work. That's what it says. They put what they've been given to work. And when the master comes back, he says, well done, good and faithful servant. You've been faithful with a few things. I'll put you in charge of many things. Come and share your master's happiness. That's what he wants. He wants us to share his happiness because when we're faithful in small things, he's able to trust us with big things. The few turns into the many. At Meadows Community Church, which is where I was before I was here, we engaged in a massive building project. And one of the things that was my absolute not joy was to be involved in the process of engaging with charitable trusts to raise money for the building projects. I wrote to countless trusts, and I learnt to save time by finding out what the parameters were that they worked to. So some would say, if you look through all of their notes, that they had a particular thing about compassion projects, or youth, or community development, or renovation work. And we could then make a submission based on where their aims and our parameters were in conjunction. And we could make use of the generous resources to help us where we were helpless. But the thing is, it didn't matter how brilliant our project was and how convincing our submission, if it didn't fit in with their aims, we didn't get the money. And they wanted to see what we did with the first installment before they paid us the next installment. And there's a sense in which it's the same when we look to unlock kingdom power and blessing and riches. God says, spend yourselves, give it away, extend your souls, pour yourself out. Those are the parameters that release kingdom funds for you from my charitable trust. And he says, I want you to spend it on this. And we say, we'd rather spend it on this. Can we have it, please? And he says, no. And you say, well, you're mean. And he says, I'm not mean, but these are the parameters of the kingdom trust. We say, we've only got $10 left. Can we have $100, please? And then we promise you we'll spend it, God. And God says, let me see you spend the 10, then I'll give you the 100. Do you see? Do you agree? Look at when the Holy Spirit's poured out in the Bible. Look at the context for signs and wonders, miracles and salvation. Look at when the church is blessed. It's when followers of Jesus act as agents of the kingdom, giving it away, reaching out, taking risks, meeting needs, spending ourselves. That's the way it works. Fulfilling kingdom tasks is what unlocks kingdom power. Now, there are times when God in his grace pours out the Spirit simply to bless. But his desire is to do much more than bless. It's to equip. It's to empower so we can give away what we've been given. So the many get to share what the few have. And that leaves us with our final area, and that is maintaining kingdom perspective. Now, like some, I don't know like whether it's some or whether it's like many, but after Christmas, I go back to my exercise program, which is kind of lain low, become a little fallow during the Christmas period. And so I go back to probably three times a week, just getting some regular exercise and doing the things that I know help me to stay healthy. Now, I want to tell you that as a 50-year-old, I pretty much never look forward to it. I don't know if I did as a 40-year-old either, but it seems to be harder now. I pretty much never look forward to doing exercise, and I pretty much never want to do it. Now, sometimes after 10 minutes, I get into it, and it's, you know, that's quite good, actually. Sometimes it's 15 or 20. Sometimes it's just never. And I didn't want to do it, and I didn't enjoy doing it, and I didn't feel very good after I'd done it. What's that all about? But I know it's good for my heart. I know it's good for my general fitness. I know it's good for my blood pressure and my stress levels. I know it's good for my mind because it helps in that area of exercise. I know it helps maintain a healthy weight level. Don't look too hard. So I do it, and I feel the benefit, and I reap the rewards, but I still don't want to do it next time. Isn't that the way it is? The trouble is, my feelings are powerful forces, and my feelings tell me, you don't want to do that. The tennis is on. Surely you can get fit by watching Rafa Nadal. Surely, you know, some of it will just kind of sink in. My feelings are powerful, but they don't take me anywhere good. And so my feelings need to be ignored, and they need to be fought. And when it comes to spending ourselves, living out kingdom principles, it's often the same. It's the last thing we feel like doing. Even though we know we're talking about kingdom tasks, even though there are kingdom promises attached, even though we will unlock kingdom power, and even when we've done it and it's been great, we still don't want to do it again. Because our feelings are powerful, and we feel like we don't have the resources. I don't know how many times people have said to me, I just don't have the emotional resources. How do we know? Who says? Who made up that phrase, emotional resources, anyway? It's expressing something that's to do with our feelings, isn't it? I feel like I can't do that. But when we do it, we discover that we can. Our feelings are powerful, but they don't take us anywhere good, so there are many times when we need to ignore them or fight them. Now, I'm not talking about dashing on a headlong track towards a nervous breakdown. I'm talking about faithful service and spending ourselves for God. And unlike my physical fitness endeavors, where I have decidedly finite resources, the kingdom resources we're tapping into are beyond measure. But we can't prove it without doing it. We don't unlock the kingdom power of healing if we don't pray for people for healing, do we? And we go, see, there's no one ever been healed that I know of. I've never prayed for anyone and seen them be healed. And then you go, have you ever prayed for anyone? They go, well, no. What's that got to do with it? Stop confusing me with facts. My mind is made up. We need to live kingdom principles, claim the kingdom promises, to unlock the kingdom power. However we feel, because feelings are a bad guide and a bad master, and God's truth is to be trusted. And God says in this passage, do this, and you can look it up when you get back, and you'll be a light in dark places. Your darkest times will be full of light. You'll get guidance. Oh, yes, please. Your needs will be satisfied in this sun-scorched land. Your strengthened frame, that means what holds you together, will grow stronger. You'll be like a well-watered garden. You'll be like a spring whose waters don't fail. You'll be used to rebuild and repair and restore. I want some of that, don't you? I want some of that for our church, for myself, for my family. God says, spend yourselves on behalf of the hungry. Satisfy the needs of the oppressed. even if you think there's nothing left, even if you're down to your last 10, because just round the corner there's all this, and it's waiting for you if you claim the promises, if you live the principles. But you have to keep maintaining the perspective. What does it look like? It's different for every person. It's different every day. What did it look like for me this week? Well, I'll give you one example. I'd had an extremely difficult pastoral situation that I was distressed about. It was 40 degrees. I didn't get to sleep till 2 o'clock in the morning. At round about 5, God woke me up and told me about this that I needed to bring on Sunday. So I'm lying in bed, absolutely feeling wiped out. And I say to God, if this is from you, Lord, surely you can remind me in the morning. You can see the logic of it, can't you? If it really is a God thing, then he'll remind me. And he says, if this is from me, surely it's worth getting up for. It was a low blow. But he got me. So that's what spend yourself looked like for me one night this week. What does it look like for, let's say, Judy? Well, for Judy, it looks like when someone comes to her with an issue that for her is the 1,000th time she's heard it, but for them is the first time they've experienced it, seeing the person and not the issue. What does it look like for Noel? It's when God prompts him to pray for one of his clients. And he's tired, and he doesn't like the client particularly. Or whatever, I use humor. And he does it. And he risks embarrassment, because it's a kingdom thing, and he's giving it away. What does it look like for Harry? For Harry, it looks like when he's tired at the end of the day, God reminds him about someone he needs to call. And he picks the phone up, and he checks to see how they're going. Just 3 or 4 examples. It looks like being willing, being available, listening. It looks like being more excited about what God's doing than afraid of the cost. We need God's power. We long for his presence and blessing. And this morning, he shows us how and waits for us to respond. And this morning, I want to say to you, don't worry about the little that you feel you have. Remember the greatness that God has promised. Because if we do that as a church, we can unlock God's power. And we can meet the very, very needs that he longs for us to meet and experience his blessing too. In a moment, we're going to pray, and then I'm going to ask Kel to lead us. I think I'd like us to sing Unfailing Love again. The reminder of God's power and resources. And anything else you feel led to? I simply want to say that if you want to respond to this by saying, yes, Lord, do it. You don't need to have special ministry to do that. You might want to ask your friends or family to pray for you in it. But if you do have needs, then we would love to pray for you this morning, because everyone here wants to give it away. And even though they're sitting at tables or chairs feeling tired, they know that God will give them resources if they minister to you. So you should be fine. You should be, if you go onto that carpet, there should be scores of people longing to pray for you. And if you want prayer for healing, then please go, and we'd be delighted to pray for you. I'll pray now, then we'll finish with worship. Lord, help us now to take on board the word you've given us. Let it be a word that brings freedom and life and blessing and power. Help us to trust your promises and claim your promises and live your promises, so that we can experience your power, and so that the places where we live become lighter places. The darkness where we are is overcome by your light. Help us, Lord, in Jesus' name. Amen.